And we're live over here to Original Podcast, the most original podcast in the world. Tonight, I have my longtime friend, Raymond Anderson, a.k.a. Nation of No One. How you doing, bud?
Hello. Hello there. I'm surviving. Got hay fever really bad right now. Allergies. Yeah, so I took a Benadryl about a half hour ago. Feel a little sleepy, as it were, because of it. But, you know how it is.
Oh, yeah, man. I woke up this morning thinking I had COVID. I was super freaked out because I've had the sore throat, like the irritated throat for the past couple days. But it just seems to be my sinus and my allergies. Mm-hmm. That shit's rough, man. But, so, I've known you for a pretty long time now. I think, like, close to 10 years, right? I met you in 2013, or no?
Yeah, that sounds about right. That's when we started playing TLC Tavern. Maybe 2012.
Oh, TLC.
The exact date, but
man,
roughly around that time.
Let's talk about that for a minute. That was a whole era, man, of playing at TLCs.
Amazing memories, absolutely. I'll never forget that place. It was a very dingy little bar, but it was a good time. It was run by this really cool guy. Got to meet a lot of the local musicians. A lot of them left huge impacts on me, yourself included. A lot of them sadly aren't doing as much music as they used to. It's sad, but
yeah, man.
Those were good times.
Rest in peace to J-Lo Blue too.
Rest in peace to J-Lo Blue. Yep.
You know, there was a whole crowd that was up there, and I feel like, out of all of them, J-Lo Blue is the one that really pulled me aside and talked to me and was like, you know, he really gave me some motivation to keep doing it. He even shot my first music video for free.
Was that PRPL?
No, it was called Purple Haze.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, it is super similar, but J-Lo did that video. Cooch is in that video. My dad's dogs made cameos.
I don't think I ever was at a TLC jam night where he was there. I was there when Matt-O-Matic and was up there, and one night Whiskey Stills and Hash, before I joined them, they were playing when it was just John Keefe and Jordan.
That's actually how I learned about them, I'm pretty sure, was the TLC shows. And that's the first time I'm pretty sure I've seen a Matt-O-Matic perform as well, him and Dave Langford.
Mm-hmm.
So, who was running those shows at the time? Was it all through Vinny?
I think so. Yeah, it was Vinny.
To get booked, I would always talk to him to have a slot up there. But that's a classic place for Elyria, man. It was a cool little bar. All the times I was up there, I never really had any issues. It was always cool people.
It was a real shame they stopped doing music, too. They could have kept doing it.
Yeah, for real, man.
I actually went up to them and talked to their new management to try and get them to do shows again a long time ago, mind you, not
right.
Recently.
Right. Yeah, because they're not open anymore, right? They're shut down?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I imagine so.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Elyria would really benefit from that if we had a newer place like that that was actually renovated and had a budget to actually pay locals? I mean, of course, maybe not much, but if you're able to pay an act $100 a night or something, you know, especially if it's a band, if you split it five ways, I mean, you all still get dinner for the night or gas in the car. You know what I mean?
Especially now that we're getting into post-COVID restrictions, nonsense, and all that jazz, I would say, yeah, a lot of, and I'm kind of starting to see a lot of venues are doing this. There was a new music venue that's opened up in Lakewood recently that I went to go see my friend at. They still have a lot of renovating to do for, like, the first gig of the season. They only had, like, maybe 30 people there actually in attendance, but the place itself had great acoustics.
What's the name of that spot?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I'd have to get my phone. Yeah, I'd have to. Excuse me a moment. Yeah, I went to go see a guy by the name of Chris Norris. He performs under the name Misery Melody, and he's a really great performer, and I'm gonna be doing some songs with him here soon.
That's actually dope to hear. I'm pretty sure I have him on my Facebook. I'm pretty sure I met him through the local scene over the years I've seen him perform.
Yeah, he was part of a band that also did a couple of the TLC gigs called Tomorrow's Dying Heroes.
Okay, all right. So, do you think that the music scene is active here in Elyria and Lorain County? Or what do you think that we could do to try to step it up, to try to make it better?
Give me a second. Good question. As far as like choking on shit, sorry. Trying to talk and have this shit in the back of my throat.
It's all good. Take your time.
It really boils down to having venues that people want to go to, and like you said, the money's got to be good for a lot of these musicians, especially these days.
Right, because I feel, I mean, even if, you know, they did three acts a night and they could pay them $100 a slot or even $50 a slot, you know, I mean, if you're local, you should be able to bring at least five people to your shows, whether it's your parents, your family, your friends, some random guy on the street you just told about it, you know what I mean? So I feel like there's a way locally, if we had a spot, people could bring it in. That was one of the issues that I noticed a lot of artists had with performing out in Cleveland and being from out here. Because even though it's a 20-30 minute drive, it's very, very hard when you're an upcoming new artist to get people to come even that far to support you. If it ain't quick and easy and right now, a lot of times they're going to back away unless they're really a fan of you.
Yeah, so there it really boils down to what kind of cities you're going to try and put these together into. So Cleveland has some issues where it's very clicky, and one of the bigger issues that Cleveland has is a severe lack of parking spaces for people to go out and go to these gigs, and you know.
That's true.
You want to leave your car in a safe place. So there are other cities that I feel like do this better, like Vermilion, for instance. And I feel like there's at least with my past experience, there's definitely a lot more solid money to make out in Vermilion than Cleveland.
No, I feel that. Because Cleveland is kind of packed with a lot. And even when I did my birthday show back in April, the parking, I had a lot of people pull up who didn't stay. Like, they pulled up and they were like, oh, I'm about to go find a parking spot. And we seen them drive around 3-4 times and then we never seen them again. They just went home. And they still bought a ticket and showed love. They were ready to come see the show. But that kind of hurt my heart because these are my real supporters taking time out of their day, taking time off work, finding babysitters, jumping through all the hoops to even go out for the night. And they can't even find a good parking spot to come see the person they want to see who they spent their hard-earned money on. So it affects your relationship with the fans and the people who want to come and support you.
Yeah, and then there's also the issues of hipsters walking around not paying attention to people in the driving in the streets. There's like that little roundabout near the Odeon where it has like tons of people always going to and fro, and it's frustrating because it's a road. It's not a sidewalk.
So. Right.
I'm sorry. I get it. You're this really hip young guy. You got important places to be, and you wish you lived in New York. But other people need to fucking get along and drive on the road.
Exactly. So, do you feel like bringing the live venue scene more out here to a place like Lorain County would definitely do better?
Greater Lorain County, yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you think, with that being said, that it's more genre based out there? Because, you know, being a hip hop artist here in Ohio, it is hard to get booked if you're not inner city. If you're trying to go to a venue that's outer city or more out of the county like that in the rural areas, it's very hard to get that support because of the stigma on the hip hop. So I feel like doing something out there in that county, maybe it would stride better if it was more of like a different lane, you know?
Yeah, that is also one of the issues with the receptiveness of the audience of Northeastern Ohio. They all have their own cliques and they all have their own types of things that they prefer to listen to. Lakewood, they like their heavy metal acts. They like their emo punk and stuff like that. what's that one place? Is the Grog Shop out in Lakewood? I can't remember.
Grog Shop. Cleveland Heights.
Alright, that makes more sense. Grog Shop's kind of cool because it does a little bit of both. It'll do a little bit of hip-hop, a little bit of rock. And if there were more venues like that that were willing to dip their toes into different types of music. Genre, if you ask me, is just kind of it's an illegitimate way of classifying music. Functionally, the purpose it serves is purely for marketing reasons. Past that, genres are just kind of bullshit, but most music consumers do not think this way.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I feel that more than ever because in today's era, there's so much genre bending, you know? But really, I wouldn't even call it genre bending. I feel like it's more of just people making music and making music off of what they feel, and I feel like there's a really thin line with a lot of it, because you got people that are into like one scene and they're doing it and they're doing good, and maybe they're feeling like trying another thing and experimenting, but then you got people who do it off of the strength of just trying to fucking get the marketing and get the clout off of it, you know?
Yeah. So as far as like the future of the local music scene goes, if the venue owners aren't playing ball, it's going to be really hard for a lot of the especially young startups, fresh musicians to really get a good starting point, unfortunately.
Right, and you know what's crazy is, man, is I've faced that challenge the whole time coming up. Is like trying to get booked in my own city, like trying to get booked in Elyria. It doesn't happen for me. I mean, in the TLC days it did, but like these days, like the only way I'm gonna get booked in Elyria is if we throw the show. Is if I book me, you know what I mean? And that's kind of sad because it's sad, man. Because it makes me feel like the scene's too clicked up, you know. And I wanna make sure everybody has a chance to get on. That's why when I was doing my shows, like they were never just a rap show. You know, we would have you, then we'd have Matto, then we'd have Mo Beats, and we always try to fucking switch it up and keep it one thing. That's something me and Kuchip always talked about. It's like all music being a part of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, do me a favor real quick. Send me a link to this stream so I can repost okay. it on my own Twitter. Sound, and the way I see it, if a person decides, okay, look, I want to be a person that expresses his art through sound, through music, you have to open your mind up and be able to understand that there is ultimately no real limiting factors for what you can do, especially these days with how modern technology works and how you can incorporate that into music. You can do the types of things that people like 50 or so years ago would have never have thought possible. It's only a matter of two things. One, the personal skill and the vision of the person trying to create said artistic piece.
I agree with that a lot. And you know what I also think about a lot, man, is like I feel like we come from this unique generation of one foot in, one foot out with technology. So we grew up with computers and a couple things that started to introduce us to the technology. And when I was a kid, 12, 13, and wanted to start making beats and experimenting with this, I knew nothing. And I didn't have the resources to look up a studio or equipment and stuff like this to really get myself going. So I was stuck on how to move with that for a while, you know. And nowadays kids have, they, you could literally make an album off an iPhone these days. I made all the dude, yes, I made all the beats off To Cleveland and Beyond off a GarageBand. You know what I mean? You just gotta use what you have. But that's because I was putting in work for the last 5-6 years making beats, though, and just studying and fucking up and making shitty beats and getting back to it, you know?
Yeah. So when I originally started off as a songwriter, composer, if you will. I had a bit of an issue where I had a lot of vision, but not a whole lot of technical know-how to be able to mix down a piece of music and make it a presentable idea. Like, I tried to bake a cake without learning the recipe, so to speak, and that was a limiting factor that kind of squashed a lot of my earlier projects, and I feel like a lot of people didn't really understand the kind of music I was trying to make. But as the years went by, and as I started to play in more rock-oriented acts, I kind of managed to get a certain set formula down for, like, what to create the type of environments I need in order to get what I'm looking for in a piece of music.
Mm.
You know, it takes time. For some people, it clicks a lot faster. There's a few artists that I know that are have only been writing music for like 2 or 3 years now. And they got quite a bit of a buzz going for them, and I got to meet this one young artist recently. Her name is Jezebel Gebirgeble. She plays like 12 fucking instruments, and she's only 18. And she has like 4 albums and a huge buzz going for her. And she started off just using simple means to create her music, and that's a fascinating thing for me. One of my favorite things to see in the modern era is I like to find young songwriters that are creating just top-notch type stuff with the most limited means possible, because it really, it's inspiring. It shows you what you can really do when you have a will, and eventually the way will come.
Right, exactly.
Where there's a will, there's a way. You just gotta have the will.
Exactly. And I was saying this today, man. I was on a consultation with another artist earlier, and I told him, like, a lot of people don't want to do the work. You know, like, none of this is guaranteed. Being an entrepreneur, investing in yourself, investing in the marketing, none of this is guaranteed. And for someone to step up and do what they can with a bare minimum and make a good piece, and then really invest in research and find out the best way to really market themselves and really turn themselves into a brand is amazing, you know?
Yes.
That's amazing. But more about the music. I know you have an album dropping May 31st. I actually got to shoot one of your videos that was a little bit of a learning curve for us both, but I'm really excited with how that video came out.
Oh, yeah. It turned out really well. The vision for it, I feel like we were able to capture the vision pretty well for it. The song is in question, of course, is called Shabby Little Games. For anybody watching the podcast, you can find it on my YouTube. Just go to Nation of No One. And yeah, it was a really fun music video. You helped out. Cooch helped out. It turned out really well.
I think
first music video that I'm actually proud of, to be honest.
Well, hey, man, there's always going to be more. We're definitely going to do some more, you know?
Absolutely.
But I think Cooch hitting you with the cards, with the deck of cards in that video is like my favorite scene. That was funny.
Yeah, it hit well.
So, Shabby Little Games. Tell the people about that. Tell the people about the concept and what inspired you to create that song.
Well, for as intense of a piece of music as it sounds, the lyrics are about me being pissed off about the fact that my PlayStation 4 kept deleting my save files. I basically started the piece of music because I needed something to kind of like distract me from my frustration, because I was on the verge of taking this game console out to the parking lot with a baseball bat. So as far as like the musical direction of the piece goes, the way the instrumental was conceived and how it works, it actually uses multiple tempos.
Okay.
For the bulk of the piece of music, it has a slower tempo. But once it actually hits the chorus, the tempo of the piece changed. Now, the reason I wrote it like this is because it was during a time where I just genuinely didn't see any of my music getting performed anytime soon. And shabby little games, I would need a minimum of 2 guitar players, a key player, a bass player, and a drummer to do a somewhat competent performance of it. So it just seemed to me it might be kind of a cool idea to experiment with tempos and do things with tempos that I wouldn't be able to do quite accurately with a full band performance, such as sudden tempo changes.
Okay. That is pretty amazing. And for those who haven't checked out the video, you guys can go check out the video. I'm still kind of new to doing videos. I really appreciate that you let me and Cooch kind of direct that for you and put that together.
I appreciate you helping me with it.
For sure, man.
Lord knows I wouldn't have had a good visual direction without a helping hand.
And, you know, that's another thing, man. As an artist, what I really admire about you is your creativeness. You never cease to not impress me. Every time I hear a piece of music, I hear the progression in the music. And knowing you for so long now and having physical copies of your albums and your works and studying them and going back through, you can definitely see that your strengths have been evolving more and more with your composing, your performing vocally on the song, the writing. Literally every area just seems to get better with each release.
I try.
And something I was wanting to get into with that is, you know, being an artist and having these things and you feel like your music's getting better and better, but you feel like you're still not picking up traction. Now, with us both being artists, we could probably both relate to these issues, because anyone who's ever tried to do this has went through this, you know. So how do you feel like artists could go about more ways of getting heard and getting their music out to the people, to the right audience?
So, in terms of strategizing, the closest thing that has worked for me would be collaboration, trying to find relatively like-minded artists that may not even necessarily be working in the same loosely defined lines of what genre constitutes their music, and try and find people that are otherwise like-minded and want to see you succeed, and who you feel like can add something that you don't feel like you're capable of producing yourself to your music. One of the biggest and most fascinating things about a little case study, as it were, for me, would be Jezebel Gebirgebleh's fans. Because so many of these people are artists, and half of the marketing for her music just comes from fan art from characters featured in her songs.
Right.
And it's kind of astonishing just to see how many young, talented digital artists are just like creating all of these things for her and just doing half of the footwork for marketing her music herself. So if you can find that, if you're an artist and you can find fans that are willing to do tons of fan art for you or stuff like that, you're gonna go far.
Exactly, because then you got the people helping you carry that. You got the people building your momentum for you and being like a natural marketing case. And you know, it's crazy, me and Cooch talk about it all the time, that we're the most professional people in the music business, it feels like. Because a lot of people we meet, either starting out, in the middle, or even industry people that I met, aren't hip to the business side of the music. How to register the BMI, you know, how to not get in trouble. Because say you get booked to come do a show, and the venue don't have a proper music license, and an artist will register their show at that venue, BMI is going to fine that venue $25,000 for not having a music license. And these venues will get mad at the artist, but if the artist ain't making no money, I mean, either way, if you're performing at a venue, you have the right to claim that. That is your business. You're there for a paid gig. You know what I mean?
Yeah, PRO's got to do their job too. And that's just one of the ways venue owners try and cut corners.
Yeah, and you know, that is a strong income for the artist. I remember, dude, there was like, I mean, not since COVID, but before COVID, we were doing show after show after show after show, and them checks maybe ain't much sometimes, but they're definitely there, and they're building revenue for your business. you know? But I feel like where a lot of artists lack is they just want to be an artist. They want to let somebody manage them. And in that case, that's when they get fucked over and they see the sneaky shit going on. And it's like, you're the artist. You got to be in charge of your team. You got to hire and fire everybody. You know what I mean? Luckily, in my situation, a lot of my best friends are hustlers and earners, and they like to do business and get shit done. And they also have a love for what they do and a love for the music and other shit. So I've been blessed with solid people around me, but I've had to go through the ringer with managers. You know what I mean? Luckily, no one's ever got over on me, but just dealing with shitty energy and shitty vibes, that's something you definitely got to be aware of. A lot of artists nowadays just want to do drugs and make the music, or cake and make the music. They don't think about none of this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah. you yourself, I know we've been talking a lot about this, and I'm happy that you take it so seriously. I'm happy that you take it this serious to really give it your all and invest in yourself to really do something like this, because that alone is what's going to make it happen for you.
Yeah. With me and my approach, I'm by no means doing this in all the proper ways. There are ways I can improve in regard to that too. But one of the things that I've kind of come to understand as a musician and what it means to do what we do and to succeed, you have to go into the shit and realize, like, people die for this shit. Like,
oh yeah,
this for some people, being a musician is no fucking joke. Mm. If you take a look at, say, Henry Rollins, for instance, and like what the early tours of Black Flag were like, half of the time people wanted to go up there and beat them up because they thought they were a bunch of skinheads back when Henry Rollins had a bald head. But right. Then he grew his hair out, and next thing you know, all the skinheads wanted to go to the Black Flag shows to beat up Henry Rollins.
Oh, man.
Can't win. Sometimes you can't win either way. No, and man. That's what you have to understand as a musician. There's mm-hmm. a lot of people in this world that just aren't going to like what you do, and they're not going to like what you do just because you're the one doing it.
And, you know, I've been self-employed through my own self for about 2 years now, and it ain't just off the music, it ain't just off one thing or the other. Some days I gotta have six hustles just to make it, you know? But in turn, I learned that, like, I would rather depend on myself, because everyone tells you just to get a day job or that that's a good thing, but... Man, I've done it, you know? I worked at this company. I was a top salesman. I got shit on because it was when COVID first happened. And even though I was a top salesman for 2.5 years, because I got COVID and I was out for 1 week and didn't hit my quota, I got fired instantly. No unemployment through that, you know what I mean? And every fucking day, I'd be working 8-hour days, 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week. I would come home from working, and I would go straight to the music. I really didn't have any kind of social life. I just kind of focused on the music, you know? Mm-hmm. But now...
Yeah.
But now it was just at a point to where, like, okay, I learned so many things in that time. I taught myself how to design a website. I educated myself to, like, publishing and how to do certain things. And do a bunch of business things that were on brand with me being an artist and what I was doing. But I didn't have to solely depend on the music to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am unfortunately in a position where I still have to work a day job. It is what it is. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to put food on your table somehow. Music sometimes gets me some fucking gas money, maybe.
You know, that's and that's one thing that I've been seeing rappers post a lot, too, is 9-to-5s aren't corny. Like, it's good to have a 9-to-5, you know? Dude, I think about doing it every day. You definitely do what you got to do. And if I didn't advance all these things I've been working on over the years, I would still have a day job. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, like, if you're an artist and you really want it and you're building, it's definitely going to get to a point that you would have an option to be like, let me try this. You just got to have the hustle to make it happen all the way around and not just in one area, you know?
Yeah, And with the skill set I've managed to develop over the years as time has gone by, I feel like I'm definitely more confident in terms of what I can do in the future. I have skill sets that let me help other artists, for instance, create their vision. Like, I can learn other people's music relatively easy. I'm collaborating not just with I didn't even discuss that yet. We discussed that at the start of the call before we actually went live. I've got to mention that. So mm-hmm. as a matter of fact, I'm going to divert to that. I'm doing a collaborative project with a Lorain County recording artist by the name of Misery. His real name is Chris Norris, but he performs under the name Misery Melody. We're going to be doing an EP together soon.
Hell yeah. That's exciting. Do you want to tell the people a little about the album coming and plans you have for that and maybe what they could expect?
Yes. Okay. So, change of heart. The biggest idea for what I had going forward when I was compiling the tracks for this album, I was doing a lot of a combination of a lot of really angry rock and punk songs that had a heavy emphasis on vocals going through amplifiers, so amplified vocals. In addition to this, I also was doing a lot of ballad type stuff. So for me, when I think of the intensities of mood swing, I have issues with mood swings to divert a little bit. But for me to feel like I could fully express that, I wanted to present the soft, the ballad type stuff in addition and sometimes directly juxtaposed next to the really angry, the really hard hitting rock type stuff that I was doing and recording at the time.
Okay.
So there are a few, for people who kind of want to get an idea of what the music is going to be like for the album, there's a couple of pieces that are already out on SoundCloud, so just go to Nation of No One on SoundCloud. A Shabby Little Games, that's going to be the opening track. There's a piece of music I recorded last year shortly after the IDF started bombing the Gaza Strip again. It was called Free Palestine. That's going to be on the album. I did a piece of music that starts off on acoustic guitar but then goes into a full band arrangement called The Witch is Born.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That one is going to be on the album. Just to give people an idea of what to expect once the album drops.
Sounds exciting, man. Like I was saying, I'm definitely a big fan of you, so I'm excited for the drop and to really check it out and see what you got to bring to it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mean to suck my own dick when I say this, but it's probably the best album I've ever put out in terms of songwriting, in terms of production, in terms of like direction for what I want to get out of it. It's the goddamn best album I ever made.
So. Hey man, well that's definitely how it's supposed to be. You know, I feel like I've been lacking because I dropped To Cleveland and Beyond in 2020, in January of 2020. So I've been thinking, like, damn, you know, I've really been wanting to drop an album, but I've been trying to really make sure, like, when I drop another album, this is going to be the best album I've dropped yet. So I've just been trying to take my time.
And that's one of the frustrating things about putting together an album, too, when it comes to marketing. It's easier to market a single, especially if you put a video to a single. It's way easier to market that and get people to listen to that. But the somebody, hey, I put together a whole 50 minutes worth of music that I want you to listen to, and it's the best thing ever. Come check it out. Most people are going to be like, and it might be the best thing ever, but they're just going to be like, they got short attention spans. They're going to be like, yeah, I don't want to listen to that. Just, you know, it's not a single or something like that. People prefer singles nowadays, unfortunately.
Exactly. And, you know, it comes back down to having those real people behind you. If you have a real supporter or a real fan, they're definitely going to listen to that whole project. You know what I mean? That's what I've been struggling with is I didn't want to rush a project, and I'm still building a core. So it's like I was trying to put out a bunch of dope singles throughout the year and then put together a project behind the scenes as well. Because you're right, man. People, it's the attention span is crazy. I think that's why a lot of newer movies suck. I think that's why a lot of shit just seems like it sucks and it's bland, because they're doing so much right now to capture someone's focus.
Yeah, as far as movies go, I don't watch movies. that shit's boring to me.
I watch YouTube. I watch a hell of a lot of YouTube. Yep.
Watch a bit of YouTube here and there. Most of my entertainment comes from the internet. Hollywood has just gone tits up boring. It wasn't bad enough that it's a cesspool of degenerate pedophiles, but in addition to that, now they just put out boring movies.
Oh man, that shit's crazy. So we got the album Change of Heart coming May 31st from Nation of No One.
Yes, it's gonna be great.
I'm really excited. Do you want to tell the people where they can find you?
You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, literally everywhere. Bandcamp. You'll have to go out of your way to find an obscure music platform that's not going to feature my music for this release. It's going to be pretty much everywhere.
Where can they find you on, like, Instagram and Twitter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. My Twitter is kind of entertaining. I share memes, yell at people. the usual things people use Twitter for.
Usual. All right, well, this has been Over Here's Original Podcast, the most original podcast in the world, and we have my guy Raymond Anderson, Nation of No One, on. And you guys can get his new album, Change Your Heart, May 31st. Be on the lookout for that.
Yes.
All right, Ray. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, it's been fun. Let me do some more shilling real quick, if that'd be okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wrap this up. Yeah, so, like I said, I'm putting an EP together with Misery Melody from Lorain County. In addition to this, I am also going to be recording an EP with two guys out of Texas that I've done different kinds of work with before. One's a visual artist. The other is also a visual artist, but I had him do like vocal work for me.
Okay.
I am trying to convince them to record a whole EP with me, and I've sent them some demos, so hopefully that'll be another thing that comes on the horizon. After Change of Heart comes out, a good portion of what I'm going to be putting out is going to be collaborative EPs with artists that I've wanted to work with for a while.
Nice, man. Well, we're looking forward to it.
You kind of cut out. I didn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said we're looking forward to it, and I'm excited to hear it, man.
Mm-hmm.